We're digging in today in what's been described as an exceptional garden. It was an inspiration for the founding of the nation's Garden Conservatory. It was the first private garden funded by the effort which transformed it from a private garden to a public treasure. The garden isn't here in the islands, but rather in Walnut Creek, California. But its director, Brian Kemble, has his roots in Hawaii. Kemble has been with the Ruth Bancroft Gardens for close to 40 years. We caught up with him at a backyard gathering with members of Hawaii's Cactus and Succulent Society. Kemble talked to us about his bold and dry garden and growing up in one of Oahu's wettest neighborhoods.
Well, it's quite a transition because I grew up in Manawili, which is on the wet side of Oahu, and very high rainfall every year. And we get much less in California, about 20 inches in the Bay Area. And so that's considerably less rainfall. But however, a lot of succulents come from places where the rainfall is in the summertime and is dry in the winter. And that's the opposite of us. We have a Mediterranean climate in California, so our rainfall is all in the wintertime and completely dry in the summer. People oftentimes come to the Bancroft Garden and they say, well, you probably don't have to water, do you? Because these are all desert plants that are adapted to dry conditions. And we say, oh, we certainly do have to water, because a lot of the plants in the garden, like most of the cacti, for example, come from places that get rainfall in the summertime. And if we didn't water them in the summertime, they wouldn't grow. So they do have to get watered. And the real question for us is, will they tolerate our rainfall in the wintertime when they really don't want it? And some will and some won't. And by trial and error, we discover which ones.
So share with our listeners what the Ruth Bancroft Gardens is all about.
Well, Ruth lived in Walnut Creek, and she was an avid gardener. She had a rose garden and an iris garden and an herb garden and so forth. And she began to get interested in succulents. In the 60s and the 70s, she really started collecting succulents. And she had a little garden where she grew them in the ground, but a very small one. And in 1971, her husband took out 3.5 acres of walnut trees. And so that left a large space for her to work with. And so she set to work planting a big garden out in the ground and hired a landscaper to help her lay it out. And he recommended a pool in the middle because he thought that there was a nice play between the dry landscape and the water of the pool. And so she dug a pool and put that in the middle. And he gave her some trees and things because he said, over time, you're going to want areas of dappled light, areas of shade, areas of sun, and the trees will give you the varying kinds of sunlight conditions that you need for varying plants. So he got her started, and then she took it from there. And it's really amazing to see what she did, because at that time in the 70s, it was considered sort of heresy to plant succulents. You know, people, what are you doing? You know, you're supposed to plant a lawn and grow all these conventional things like roses that everybody else grows. And Ruth had her own ideas, and she went about planting all these succulents. And actually, cacti were not for her a focus in the beginning. She was more interested in rosette succulents, like the aloes and the agaves and the echeverias. And over time, she got more and more interested in the cacti, and they became an important part of the mix as time went along.
Now, California has had its challenges with water, too.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. So when Ruth planted the garden in the early 70s, there were no restrictions on water, but in the late 70s we had a drought, and we've had other droughts since, and on some occasions the water supply has been so low that they've had to have restrictions on water usage, and so everybody's become much more aware of water usage and plants that don't require so much water to keep up. So a lot of water districts now have a program where if you take out your lawn and put in something that's drought tolerant, they'll help to subsidize that. So everybody's very into succulents now. They've become a very important thing in the landscape trade. And so Ruth was kind of a pioneer because she was experimenting with these things at a time when other people weren't and when it was still new. And so she experimented with a lot of plants that people didn't know if they would grow in Northern California. And so where she succeeded, then that's been like a pioneering effort for other people to follow. So her garden's become very influential.
Now, the last time I was there, you had a fabulous, I think, art show. You had lots of wonderful art sculptures throughout the garden.
Yes, well, every year the garden hosts a sculpture show in the summertime. And so it's a month when we have all these sculptures set out in the garden, and people who don't even care about the plants come and look at all the sculptures. I always say the plants themselves are sculptures. You know, if you look at an agave and how beautifully sculptural it is, we have sculptures all year round, but we have ones made by people that happen every summer.
It's kind of like bling in the garden, I guess.
Absolutely.
So what is it about succulents that grabs you?
Well, I like their form and their colors. So the rosette form is what first drew me to them. Things like echeverias, the hens and chicks that have that almost like a flower-like form to the plant. And then the colors. The colors that they take on, all these plants that are blue and that are orange and that are pink and that are red, I mean, it's just amazing. You don't need to wait for the flowers to get the color because the plant itself has all this color in it. And to me, that's wonderful. And the more you get into them, the more amazing things you start to see, you know, in the way that they grow and the patterns on their leaves and the colors that they take on and so forth.
Do you have a favorite?
Well, aloes are an early favorite of mine. I was started out with aloes as the first thing I collected. And I was also a co-founder of the Institute for Aloe Studies, which is located in Oakland, California. And so I've been on a lot of trips to Africa and recently to Ethiopia to see, also Madagascar, to see aloes in habitat. And I never get tired of that. I could spend the rest of my life going to see aloes in habitat and never get tired of it.
Do you miss the ginger in wet Mauna Willi?
Absolutely. I love ginger and I love Mauna Willi and I love wet places too. But in terms of the plant life, I'm really drawn to the dry places. And so I do, on many occasions, go to see plants in the desert. Often in Mexico, because Mexico's nearer by. It's not so expensive to fly to as Africa is. But Africa, too, and Madagascar and Namibia and Ethiopia and places where succulents grow.
So where were you most recently?
Most recently in Baja California.
And tonight you're going to be talking with the members of the society about what exactly?
About agaves or century plants. So a lot of people have an idea of a century plant as this as a giant thing with bluish leaves that send up a stalk like a telephone pole and it blooms. And that's agave americana. That's a very commonly grown agave. But there are other agaves small enough to cup in the palm of your hand. So there are really a great variety in the genus agave. And most of them come from Mexico. We have some in the United States as well, some in the Caribbean, some down to northern South America. But Mexico has the most and the most variety. So I always love to go to Mexico to seek out ones in remote places and have adventures along the way.
And so here in this garden, in this backyard garden, there's some giant stuff that I don't know what they're called. Some of our pokies, some look hairy.
Yes, well, those are cacti, and there are an awful lot of tall columnar cacti. Everybody knows the saguaro because it's so famous and such an iconic plant, and that's one kind of a columnar cactus, but it doesn't really do very well here, nor does it do well in Northern California either. But there are a lot of other kinds of columnar cacti that have that towering cylindrical stem, and they do really well in Hawaii. In fact, Coco Crater Botanic Garden has many of them, and that's really right near here where we are now, and so the same ones do well here. So Carl has planted them out in his yard, and they've gotten enormous.
And is there any advice you can give fans of cactus and succulents on the neighbor islands, you know, because you've got such different topography and different types of habitat, really, you know? I mean, we're talking volcano to Haleakala.
Yes, well, I think drainage is the most important thing of all, having good drainage. The wetter you are in your location, you could be in Hawaii where you're getting more than 100 inches of rain, and then it's tough to grow cacti because it's just more water than they want, even with really good drainage. But even with a fairly high amount of rainfall, if you have really good drainage, then that's where you've got a leg up on everybody else. Because they don't want their feet to be standing there in mucky soil. And if the water just drains away, then they can really tolerate quite a bit of water.
And then what about for eating? Anything that's good to eat around here?
Absolutely. A lot of cacti have edible fruits, like the prickly pears. And those are widely eaten in places where they grow. But the plants themselves, there are some kinds of prickly pear where the new pads, when they first come out, they're tender, and they can be cut up and eaten sort of like string beans and put into stir fries and so forth and so on. And so those are eaten too. People are very good at finding things to live on wherever they come from. And in the Americas, where the cacti come from, they're much used all over the place, not just for eating, but for all sorts of things, for fiber, and for sometimes the core of the cactus is used as a building member and all sorts of things. So people are just good at using things.
Okay, but no cactus or succulent poke on the menu tonight? I don't know.
No, not on the menu tonight.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Well, you're welcome.
That was Brian Kemble, director of the Bold and Dry Ruth Bancroft Gardens in the Bay Area, who happened to return home over the holidays visiting family and friends.